Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual podcast on Radio MD and, of course, iHeart or wherever you downloaded us from. Thanks. This is the B segment, the guest segment. We have a wonderful guest for you today. Dr. Joshua Yamamoto has a book, You Can Prevent Stroke, put out by the Foxhall Foundation. So you can get more information by going to foxhallfoundation.com. We'll say that again. But he talks in this book. It's a wonderful book because it's simple, straightforward, and preventing a stroke isn't rocket science, at least if you follow this regimen, which I hope you do. Dr. Yamamoto, how did you get into stroke work?
Well, I am a cardiologist by training, and in Washington, D.C., the Foxhall Foundation is a nonprofit dedicated to helping folks age well. And in our community, there was a dementia program being set up. And at least in Washington, what we call multi-infarct dementia, or people recovering from strokes, is a major, major contribution to why people don't live well into their older years. And there's many things we can do to try to stay healthy, but avoiding strokes is a big part of that. And one of my patients came to me and said, "Hey, doc, what's the best way to treat a stroke?" And I looked at him and said, "You know, that's the wrong question. The best way to treat a stroke is to prevent it." And that really sparked his thinking and challenge to me to say, we all think of strokes as something we try to avoid. What do you mean we can prevent it? But yes, prevent is an active verb. We can proactively go about protecting ourselves and our circulation, because strokes may be these tragic events, but they're not random. We really know why they happen. And all too often, we wait till somebody has a stroke before we even look to see if we could have prevented it in the first place.
And so you're a cardiologist, and is Kristen Thomas, who's your co-author, is she also a cardiologist?
No, she is. Dr. Thomas is a real doctor. She is an internist of the great classical sense, meaning that she basically knows everything. And she looks out for everything, and she takes specialists like me and tries to keep us in line to help her out in managing her patients for a lifetime. And she was really the
well,
the
since I'm an internist, I'm going to say thank you for giving so much credit to internists. But anyway, we'll keep going.
All right, because, you know, guys like me, cardiologists traditionally, and in my generation, we were all trained to just fix things that were broken. And a real internist like Dr. Thomas would say, look, you guys know what happens. This isn't mysterious. This is not even really disease. This is natural aging. Arteries change with time. The heart changes with time. We're doing our part to tell people to have good nutrition and exercise, and we check various blood tests. But you cardiovascular folks have the tools to tell us how well we're doing. What is the health of this person's heart? Am I doing a good enough job with their pressure? What is the health of their arteries? And then perhaps one of the biggest things we're running into is, what are their rhythms? Because there's a heck of a lot more atrial fibrillation out there than people realize, and it's not always symptomatic. And folks
so
like
let's go into that. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at the causes of strokes in, say, 40 to 60-year-olds, how many of them are due to what we would call preventable things? And of those, how many can we get just simple numbers on versus are due to arrhythmias that we may have caused by obesity or something else, but most of us don't think of them as a direct relationship?
Well, the age range of looking at strokes is an interesting question. I made the reference to the notion that there's almost no such thing as heart disease. It's natural aging. If you have trouble at 40 years old, there's an issue that may be important that could not always be predictable. However, if you look at the 60, 70, 80, 90-year-old population, this is inevitability. Nobody is immune from aging. And that range, 40 to 60, is what a lot of us are now calling our second adolescence, or the cardiovascular adolescence. And I thought the term was kind of silly in a way, but it makes sense if you think about Our first adolescence is a time of natural age-related biologic changes. We know it's coming, we know to anticipate it, and we know that we need to manage it well, or we don't always like how things turn out. But you know what? When we hit 50 and 60, 70, we're going to have biologic changes. Getting to 50 as biologically young as possible is important, and there's a lot of things we can do with our personal choices.
Now you made a very interesting comment. Getting to 50 as young as possible. What do you mean by that?
Well, aging may be inevitable, and with 100,000 heartbeats every day, there's a lot of wear and tear. However, the first half of life, a lot of us age a lot faster than necessary. You want to age fast? Smoke. You want to age faster? Don't pay attention to your nutrition and your metabolism. Become pre-diabetic. Lose your fitness. Stop moving. All of these things can dramatically accelerate the aging process. But even if we do everything right, even Olympic athletes are not going to be immune from the effects of aging and time once they cross into the second half of life. And we are facing this enormous big bubble of all of the baby boomers and 60, 70 years old. And my patients come to me and they say, you know, I get it. We're all going to die someday, but I want to live well for as long as I can. I have 80, 90. I spend days where I see nobody younger than 90 years old. My oldest patient is currently 107. She simply laments that no one will dance with her anymore because she did everything to enter the second half of her life, young and healthy, fit and active. And then the second half of her life, she's worked with her doctors to say, look, I get it. Time goes on. Things change. Help me navigate the rest of my life so that I can stay healthy and prevent these things that could be otherwise disabling.
More of You, the Owner's Manual, coming right up. But let's take a moment to talk about your health. Dr. Roizen will tell you that a common question he gets asked often is what vitamins he likes, what he recommends. Without knowing more about their needs, that question used to be almost impossible to answer. Now, however, it's easy. Go to personanutrition.com/Roizen and take your free assessment. It's a smart and easy way to get personalized supplement recommendations. The Persona assessment is backed by the latest nutritional research and the expertise of Persona's medical advisory board, which consists of 8 nutritionists, a pharmacist, and 5 medical doctors, including Dr. Michael Roizen. All the latest scientific data and nutritional research put into one supplement program personalized for you. Just take the 5-minute assessment to get your free recommendations based on your goals, lifestyle, allergies, special diets, and prescription meds. Convenient vitamin packs are delivered to your door each month. Whether you want to sleep better, have more energy, or simply stay as young as you can, go to personanutrition.com/Roizen and get 50% off your order today. Half off now at personanutrition.com/Roizen. That's R-O-I-Z-E-N.
So let's go into the plan. One of the interesting points you put in the plan is establishing a relationship with a physician. Tell us why you have that, if you would.
I think it's very important that we have a relationship with our doctor. And again, the internist is the brainchild of this. We all age, and as we age, things are going to change. And navigating that change is something done best with somebody who knows what to expect. That is, to have a relationship with your doctor. Come to your doctor before you have a problem and say, what can I do? Because I know I'm going to get older, or at least that's the plan, and I want to do it well. So you have a relationship with your doctor because, number one, aging is inevitable, and it changes us. And two, we don't really know our health on the inside until we look, but looking is actually not hard. We have all sorts of tools and some technology, but not every test is necessary in every person. So how do I know my health on the inside? And number three, once I know my health, I'll have options of things I can do. Maybe I need to improve my fitness. Maybe I need to improve my nutrition. But maybe I've crossed the threshold where it's time to do something else. Maybe I need a pill. Maybe it's time for medication to prevent plaque growth or to keep the pressure down or to protect my heart or to help maintain a regular heart rhythm or prevent a stroke because I'm more likely to clot.
So One is establish a relationship with an internist, and I'm summarizing what you said, if you will, and part of that is to go over things about your arteries, about your risk for abnormal heartbeats, and about preventing a blood clot. So tell us a little bit about how do we prevent the arrhythmias. Is there magic in what you know about that?
Well, there's not magic so much as methodically paying attention. Our little mnemonic is to say, it's to heart. D, work with your doctor. H, ask, well, what's the health of my heart and how do I know? A, what are the health of my arteries and how do I know? R, what are my rates and rhythms and how do I know? And then T, is it time to do something? Atrial fibrillation or a sustained irregular heartbeat may actually be part of our biologic destiny if we are healthy and live long enough. If we're young and we undertreat blood pressure, if we smoke, if we're obese and have sleep apnea, yeah, you can have atrial fibrillation in your 40s or 50s. But it's really hard to live to be 90 or 100 years old without at least some irregularity. And that's where one of the big challenges comes in, particularly in women who may not feel an irregular heartbeat or at least complain about it, and who may clot more efficiently. Because as you know, when we have an irregular heartbeat, blood doesn't flow as smoothly, and that allows for it to clot. And if the clot leaves the heart, of course, it can land in the brain, and that's brain damage, that's a stroke. And we have data that would suggest as little as 5 minutes of atrial fibrillation, whether symptomatic or not, can increase or double our stroke risk. And the stroke doesn't happen right then. It can happen a month later. So all of that may sound ominous, except for the fact that we have readily available technology and testing that can identify people who are having arrhythmias, who are having atrial fibrillation. So atrial fibrillation, we like to say, it's coming, don't take it personally. And if you have AFib at 80 years old, terrific. You're like just about everybody else. If you don't want to have it early, then you want to know the health of your heart. If you overwork the heart because you're obese or you're a smoker or you have a poor metabolic profile and develop plaque, those things will change your heart earlier than you would hope, and people have irregular heartbeats sooner. So we never cure AFib, we never prevent AFib, we just accept that as we age, things will change.
Now,
and another chapter in the book, we said, if I have AFib, I need to deal with it.
We're talking with Dr. Joshua Yamamoto, Yamamota. It's from the foxhallfoundation.org about preventing a stroke. Now, you've implied that obesity is a cause, and in the book you say that, and can not getting obese, do more obese people have atrial fibrillation and thus strokes than thin people?
Obesity is a complicated issue that creates many burdens on the heart, one of which is the likelihood of atrial fibrillation. One of the things I love to tell my patients is that it's not so much the weight as the volume. If we're a bigger person, we have to circulate more. Well, you know what? That can dramatically increase the workload on the heart. When we increase the workload on the heart has to adapt and change. And when we overwork the heart, it will change. Technically, you end up with a lot of left atrial enlargement. The point is you change the heart and it makes it very hard for a heart to maintain a regular rhythm. Also, blood pressure. As we age, our arteries will naturally stiffen. That's biology. Collagen loses its elastins, meaning stiffer pipes. Stiffer pipes mean higher pressure, but higher blood pressure is not so much as a disease as it is a number. What the issue is the aging of your arteries. And if you're obese and your heart has to work more and you have higher pressure and your heart has to work harder, these are the changes that can readily predispose you to atrial fibrillation. So, yes, avoiding obesity is an important thing. There's also the issue of obesity related to sleep apnea. It's harder to breathe. And if someone was choking you and you couldn't breathe, my goodness, that's a lot of stress on the heart. You don't even wake up for it. And that stress is a very common burden onto the heart and trigger of the irregular heartbeats or atrial fibrillation.
So in this book, you review all of the things that we can do to prevent a stroke. And let's go back to, if I can go to the basics, there are how many strokes a year in North America? And I'm saying North America because we have a fair bit of people who download us in Canada as well as the United States.
I think the number of strokes doesn't even tell the whole story. If you look at our statistics, heart attacks are considered the number one cause of death. Strokes are the fourth leading cause of death. And dementia, as I think the sixth or seventh leading cause of death. And I think it's more important to look at the totality of it because all of these are really related. It's all about maintaining optimal circulation as we go through time. There are hundreds of thousands of heart attacks and strokes every year, and dividing them up, I think, is doing us a disservice if we think, oh, just heart attacks, oh, just strokes, oh, just vascular dementia, when it really is the whole process of navigating aging well.
So, well, it's also navigating the aging of your arteries is as I understand, part of it. And so one of the questions people will naturally have is there one test, is there one set of tests I can get to judge how old my arteries are?
Well, one test would be terrific if there was a single test that told us everything. But of course, every one of us is unique. And this is why we're big advocates of learning the questions and not assuming the answers. But that being said, there are some tests. If you want to know the health and age of your heart, you can ultrasound it. That's easy. It's covered by Medicare for any number of reasons. And looking at the heart, watching it in real time, will tell you a lot about the heart's age, its function, and your likelihood for irregular heartbeats. It'll tell you how well you're treating your blood pressure. If you ultrasound an artery, particularly the arteries leading to the brain, what we call the carotid arteries, it's amazing how much the arteries can have aged without any symptoms whatsoever. And we're not about treating numbers, we're about helping people. And if I take someone and I say, look, you've done everything right. You've been fit, you're active, you're healthy, you run, you eat well, but look, your genetics and the passage of time and 100,000 heartbeats every day beating up your arteries have caused the wear and tear that trigger the healing mechanism that have led to plaque. And there it is. I can show you the plaque in your arteries. And this gives us options that what we can do to prevent a stroke, to arrest the aging of the arteries, beyond the things that you've been doing on your own. So I'm an enormous advocate of ultrasound because it's quick, cheap, easy, painless, non-invasive. There are many other tests out there, and they all have validity to the certain people in certain circumstances, which is, again, our emphasis on working with your doctor to know what are the best tests for me.
We've been talking with Dr. Joshua Yamamoto, Yamamoto. The book is called You Can Prevent a Stroke. You can find out more information about Dr. Yamamoto at the Fox Hall, just foxhallfoundation.org in New York City. And you can find the book almost every place. It is on Amazon as well as BN.com. You Can Prevent a Stroke. And it's pretty simple what he says, not waiting for the stroke to happen, but preventing it in advance is part of what you can do. Thanks very much, Dr. Yamamoto. Randall, thank you for engineering, and especially our listeners, thank you for downloading us and listening to us. This is 958B of the podcast. You can get most of the prior ones on radiomd.com. And always the A segment, latest medical news of the week, what it means to you so that you can live at the top of your curve and not age as fast, or as we say, keep your real age young. Thanks very much, Dr. Yamamoto. Thank you for listening. And we'll be back next week. We have a guest talking about opium and the opium wars, and of course, the latest news of the week in the A segments. Thanks again.